Hey, I'm Kelly McEvers, and Embedded is back. And we recently realized it's hard to assess a politician who has virtually no political record. But with Donald Trump, we tried anyway. And we wound up with stories and lessons from the record he does have in business and on TV. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. And welcome to our fall music magazine show. This week, we're going to visit with two playwrights, one of which you have most likely heard of. The other is someone you should know if you don't already. We're going to start our show with Lin-Manuel Miranda, as the composer and star of Hamilton was watching the devastation of Hurricane Maria and its aftermath in Puerto Rico, he was compelled to do something to help. So he rolled up his sleeves and did what he does best. He wrote a song.
Say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. It's almost like praying.
It's called Almost Like Praying, and it's a collaboration with over 20 Latin musicians and vocalists, everyone from rapper Fat Joe, salsa star Ruben Blades, Broadway icon Rita Moreno, and Despacito's Luis Fonsi. These artists are tied together by some kind of connection to Puerto Rico, either culturally or musically. And all of them, when Lin-Manuel Miranda opened up his Rolodex and called them to help out, said yes. What you hear them singing are not lyrics of desperation, loss, or politics, but rather a recitation of the island's 78 towns, a roll call of sorts, making sure no one on the island is forgotten. And the title, Almost Like Praying, is a sneak peek into how his Broadway genius mind works. It's a line from the song Maria, from the play and the film West Side Story. So, the first thing I did when I called him in New York City was play him this.
Maria, say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying.
So I gotta ask you, at what point while you were watching the coverage of the hurricane did you start thinking about the song Maria from West Side Story?
Well, listen, I've got a musical theater brain. Some people have different kinds of brains, math and science, that's what I got. And, you know, I was very aware, even as it was happening, that this was the worst hurricane to hit Puerto Rico in 100 years. The eye just sat on the island for a long time. It's a Category 5 hurricane. And I knew that Maria would forever have a different connotation on the island as a result of that. And that's my favorite song from West Side Story. So I began thinking about that song and the lyrics and a way to flip it into something positive. And, you know, if I could write a song that could raise money for the island, maybe I could also flip this lyric. So really the first call I made before I even started writing the song was to the Bernstein Estate and to Stephen Sondheim asking for permission to quote that lyric. The second idea that happened almost at the same time was that there was, you know, for Puerto Ricans who live all over the world, who have a connection and family on the island, there was a terrible silence of several days where we were just waiting for word. And my Twitter feed, my Facebook feed was just filled with family members listing the names of towns where their families were living and from. My grandmother's in Lares, my uncle is in Hatillo, my uncle is in Vega Alta. Has anyone seen them? Has anyone heard from them? And I thought, well, the only lyric that really unites us and that makes the most sense for a fundraising song is if I can somehow write a lyric that includes all 78 towns in Puerto Rico so that no one feels left out and no one's town feels forgotten.
It's and I love that idea because it's almost like a roll call, you know, and the beauty of the Spanish and even the indigenous Taino names, they are like a prayer. When you say them like that, I mean, calling out even to like ancestral energy. And to me, it has the same emotional punch as the end of that song, Plástico by Ruben Blades, where we're listing those towns again. I saw a parallel, and it's just as strong in your song.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You know, it's also the one of the stories, there have been a lot of heartbreaking stories coming out of Puerto Rico, but one of the ones that broke my heart was actually not the story, but the headline. The headline in the Times on Sunday was, for many towns in Puerto Rico feeling forgotten. And that broke my heart because we're already midway in production on the song, but if, you know, hopefully we raise a lot of money for a lot of aid and a lot of relief for the humanitarian crisis we're in, but also hopefully these towns never feel forgotten again.
You had a couple of musical genres to explore for the actual music track. It could have been old school salsa that Puerto Rico's known for, at least to my generation, the folk traditions of bomba and plena, but you went with the reggaeton feel. How did you decide on that?
I decided on that because Despacito has been as much in my head as it has yours and your family's and everybody else's, you know, and, you know, that was also very freeing in a way because the fact, I'm so proud of that song for being such a hit, first of all. I've been following Luis Fonsi's career since I was in college and he was singing salsa, so it's been just joyful pride to see that song have the success it's had, but it also opens an avenue, right? Because there are a lot of people who don't speak Spanish who still love that song. And so it also gives you permission in a way, like I can write a song where the lyrics are the names of these towns. And if the beat is hot and the voices sound great, then we're okay and we're still off to the races. You know, I was so terrified of, before I sort of thought of using the towns as the lyrics, I never want a song to feel like homework. You never want a song for a cause to feel like, well, I'm buying this because I want to do good, but I don't actually listen to the song very much. I want this song to be just as catchy and just as sticky as any pop earworm. And so that was a huge amount of credit for that goes to Truco, who is Jeffrey Penalva, a.k.a. Truco, who produced the track. He'd produced Immigrants for the Hamilton mixtape for me. So he was my first choice when I finished writing the song to produce it and give it all that stickiness.
And it's so many artists contributed. Like, how did you reach out and how did you get them all on tape? I mean, that just the logistics of it would make me pull my hair out, honestly.
I broke my Rolodex, and when my Rolodex failed me, I consulted Twitter. That's the honest answer. You know, some of these people are old friends. Gilberto Santa Rosa, I feel lucky to say, sang at my wedding. You know, Rita Moreno has been a friend for many years. And so you make those calls first. And to a person, everybody said yes, having not heard the song. They felt as helpless as I did, and they were trying to do as much good as I'm trying to do and make as much noise as I'm trying to make. And so, you know, I will never forget, I DM'd Luis Fonsi on Twitter, and he just wrote back, bro, two words, I'm in. Having not heard anything, he just was in. And, you know, I remember I was recording with Rita Moreno, and she said, is Gloria Estefan on this? And I said, I don't have Gloria Estefan's number. And she whips out her phone. She goes, here's Gloria Estefan. And the next day, we're recording Gloria Estefan. So it was like that. It was also sort of a chain letter. It was sort of, are you doing the song? And so as word got out, and, you know, I reached beyond also my musical knowledge base. I, you know, once I made contact with my cousins on the island, I have three cousins, Kevin, Camila, and Daniela, but I asked Camila and Daniela, who are the big music consumers, I asked them, all right, who would you want to hear on a track? So, you know, they are the ones who were like, you got to get Pedro Capó, you got to get PJ Sinzuela. These are artists who are really, you know, may not be as well known in the United States, but are really beloved on the island, because I want Puerto Rico to embrace this, and I want everyone to embrace it.
And along those lines, this song will help raise funds for relief efforts. Now, tell us how that will work. Where's the connection, and what happens once people either download the song or listen to it somewhere?
It's very simple. So every artist on this track has waived all royalty fees. So all proceeds from all royalties go directly to the HispanicFederation.org. And, you know, even if you're streaming it, there will be a donate button on your Spotify. There'll be a donate button on your YouTube. So we know that streaming monetizes more slowly than a direct purchase. But rest assured, all money from streaming, from donating, from purchasing the song will go towards HispanicFederation.org and their relief efforts on the island.
Okay, now let's talk about you just for a little second here, because you've had a very public and emotional reaction to the devastation, the aftermath, and the politics of the recovery. Does making this song help you deal with all of that?
It does. It you know, everyone tells artists when they get political on Twitter, on Facebook, stay in your lane, write songs, stop talking. Well, I'm that's exactly what I'm doing. I agree with you. And I would much rather be writing a song than jumping up and down and making noise. So this is our way of doing that. It's also, I have to say, despite the humanitarian crisis going on the island, despite the difficulties, despite the slowness of the U.S. government's response, I have never had more faith in people, in American people, and people all over the world. You know, my Twitter feed is full of kids breaking their piggy banks to donate. People saying we were going to go on vacation, we're going to use that money and send it to Puerto Rico instead. People taking their weekend to package supplies. It makes me cry to think about it. And if the government's response were commensurate with the people's spirit and compassion, we'd be on the road to recovery and ending this crisis so much faster. So it's this weird dichotomy of being frustrated like everybody else and jumping up and down and making noise, but also being incredibly hopeful about the human spirit.
I hear what you're saying, because for me, I mean, between Puerto Rico and Mexico, I've been walking around almost like in an existential funk, you know, and we're not even talking about Las Vegas. But I got to say, you know, I listened to the song and it really lifted my spirits, because, you know, it helped me see the pride, the joy, and the resilience of those cultures in Puerto Rico and Mexico, two groups of people that have been through so much in the past. Yeah. And I think your song delivered with that.
Well, thank you so much. That means a lot. You know, one of the things I did with all the artists when I recorded them, in addition to recording their section of the tune, I asked them to just get on mic and talk about their favorite memories of Puerto Rico. Just a real positive step and a reminder of the island we love so much and what we're fighting for. And it deepened the connection so much. It was so incredible to hear Ruben Blades break down crying, talking about meeting Cheo Feliciano's family and, you know, going around the barrios with Hector Lavoe, you know, talking to Gloria Estefan about how much she owes the early success of Miami Sound Machine to Puerto Ricans on the island who made noise and brought it to the United States. Talking to Gilberto Santa Rosa, talking about how he grew up in the same neighborhood as Daddy Yankee. I mean, they could not be more different artists, but they were both saved by music and by Puerto Rican music. You know, again, like I woke up on Monday morning to that tragedy in Las Vegas like everybody else. The only way I can break through the paralysis of what do we do? What do we do in the face of such horror is look at the flip side, which is there is no shortage of ways to do good in the world. You can go donate blood for the victims in Vegas. You can donate to those victims' family. You can help in Mexico. You can help in the Virgin Islands. You can help in Puerto Rico. There are no shortage of things that need your attention and need voices and need supplies and need your attention and your care. And so that's what helps me break through is, well, okay, there's a million challenges, but there's also a million ways to do good.
Okay, before we go, I have to ask you about your very strong language directed at the current president. And judging from what I've been seeing on social media, you know, you're not alone in feeling that he's, quote, going straight to hell. What was the tipping point for you?
Well, listen, there are people way more famous than me that yell at the president on Twitter all day. So, first of all, the only reason this is news is because I'm not like that. I really take pains. I think it's important to stay informed. I think it's important to stay aware. At the same time, I'm very aware that my Twitter feed is a relief for people who are reading a lot of dire news everywhere else. I say good morning and good night every day. I post audio snippets of my son singing about trains. I post bad dad jokes. I post, you know, pictures of DuckTales. It only made news because that's usually what I'm like. At the same time, I've never seen a sitting president attack the victims of a natural disaster. I don't know how a human gets there. And I used the only words I had left for it. Every other word failed me. That was not an impulsive tweet that was just the only thing I could think to say in the face of a sitting president attacking the victims of a disaster and the elected officials on the front lines trying to help their people.
You know, the song you made, Almost Like Praying, it feels like a catharsis, a well-needed catharsis. It's a chance for us all to take a deep breath and look for the spirit of our communities for strength and perseverance, and with an amazingly catchy tune, which you did again. How do you continue to do that, man?
This one's catchier than most, too. Like, I'm like, oh, now I get it. I get why the reggaeton is so pegajoso. Right. But thank you for that. But I also, I hope it provides catharsis. It certainly provided catharsis for me to write it. I also hope the names of these towns will never be forgotten. And I hope that people have their catharsis. To quote the kids, they cry in the club, and then they get back to work, because we have a lot of work to do.
Lin-Manuel Miranda, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you.
You can hear the whole song, Almost Like Praying, at npr.org. Proceeds from every sale and stream of the song will go toward hurricane relief efforts. You can do your part by finding the website for the Hispanic Federation's Unidos Disaster Relief Fund on our website.
It's almost like praying.
Next up, we want to introduce you to Karen Zacarias. She has been winning over audiences around the country and getting loads of respect from her peers in the theater world. She has not had the kind of name recognition that could eventually lead to Broadway, but that may be about to change. Alt Latino contributor Marisa Arbona Ruiz says the admiration for Karen Zacarias may have finally hit critical mass. She visited the playwright during a recent production of her latest play, Native Gardens, at the Arena Stage at the Mead Center for American Theater in Washington, D.C., and filed this report.
Turn around and say hello to your neighbor. That's the first thing you hear before the curtains come up on Native Gardens, a comedy by playwright Karen Zacarias that deals with such not-so-funny issues as class, ethnicity, gender, and identity. The play is teeming with metaphors, presented through a growing feud between row house neighbors.
Native Gardens is a story set in Washington, D.C., which is where I live, of a young Latino couple, a rising attorney, and his PhD candidate wife, Tanya, who buy a fixer-upper in a very good neighborhood in Washington, D.C., and they move next door to longtime D.C. residents inside the Beltway, couple Virginia and Frank Butley, and everything is great as they first get along until they realize that, A, they have very different gardening styles, and that the fence that has been up for decades has been in the wrong place. A battle erupts about property and class and taste and age and all sorts of things. So it's a way of looking at a lot of isms through the lens of humor.
Here, the Del Valles react to meeting the Butleys for the first time.
It was like we entered another time and place, another galaxy.
It's a live Dick Van Dyke show, right next door.
You think we'll be that out of touch when we're their age?
No, because we're not white.
I think Karen has a unique gift to write comedies that make us laugh at ourselves before we judge others.
Blake Robeson is artistic director of the Cincinnati Playhouse and has temporarily relocated from Cincinnati to stage the play here in D.C. He says in Native Gardens, Zacarias accomplishes what other playwrights can only dream of, a hilarious dive into our collective consciousness that forces us to look at our own personal foibles and unconscious biases.
A lot of the comedy that you see in the world right now is highly satirical, biting, perhaps even a little bit vicious. And Karen is not like that. As you watch these two families deal with the property dispute in the play, you will find yourself siding with all four of the characters at different moments in the play. And so it's a seesaw ride for 90 minutes. And I don't know a lot of playwrights who can pull that off.
Frank's bringing out the wine glasses. Frank, bring up some iced tea for the little pregnant lady.
Oh, we don't need to bother you on a work night.
Nonsense. Frank does all his consulting from home now. And I've been an engineer at Lockheed Martin so long I have my own bathroom.
At Lockheed Martin?
Yes. Shocking, huh?
Oh, no, not at all.
I bet some of your best friends are old female defense contractors, right?
Zacarias began writing as a child, then later used some of her imagination to cope with some of the difficulties of being an immigrant.
I started writing when I was 6 years old and living in Mexico. I started writing poetry and short stories. And when I moved to the United States, I had a bully bother me after school. He would say something like, "You spick, blah, blah, blah." And I'd come home and I could never think of a good retort, a good response. And I would write something down so the next time I would be ready. And it didn't ever work, but in the process of starting to write a dialogue with this bully, I started to think about why this bully was a bully and kind of started making up a backstory for him. And I started writing my first play. So as a 10-year-old, playwriting was my way of understanding and kind of humanizing my immigration experience.
Fast forward to her play, Native Gardens, and the current environment of immigrant bashing.
Trump wasn't even a candidate when the original draft of the script landed in my inbox. And so the world has changed around this play. And what I've observed watching audiences at various theaters around the country is that the social fabric that we're all living in now has added a layer of depth and seriousness to the comedy, which wasn't there originally. And it's made it a better play. It's made it a better play-going experience because all good comedies, you know, have a serious underbelly to them.
Is this Native Garden something that springs from your rich Mexican culture?
It's a gardening philosophy developed by entomologists.
But it seems so rooted to a Mexican connection to the earth. There must be something there.
Except we're not Mexican.
I'm from Las Condes, Santiago, Chile. I did boarding school here.
And I'm from New Mexico.
Funny, I was sure I'd be taking a little Spanish accent from you.
That's why we thought you were Mexican.
Oh, that's so interesting, because I'm American, and I don't really speak very much Spanish.
She can swear in Spanish.
There is a momentum building around Karen Zacarias. She was named one of the most produced playwrights in the country by American Theater Magazine in 2016, and since then has had 4 to 5 premieres running across the country at the same time, while many of her other plays are still in production. She has been called brilliant by directors and theatergoers alike because of the depth and breadth of her writing, which often interpret both the Latino experience and the human condition. Two of her latest premieres, Destiny of Desire and Native Gardens, couldn't be more different, yet provoke personal reflection in wildly hilarious ways. While Destiny of Desire can be described as a telenovela that dares to break out into song, Native Gardens is more cerebral yet edgy and hits a politically charged nerve.
Well, I can tell you that I am running the show 8 times a week, and I'm laughing 8 times a week.
Jenna Lynn has been working as a union stage manager for Broadway and off-Broadway for 25 years. And as a Zacarias fan, she jumped at the chance to come to D.C. to work on Native Gardens.
Karen's writing is extremely accessible, but extremely smart. And it's the richness of the way she creates her characters, regardless of the character's background. The humanity, the humor, I'll use the word buoyancy, the resiliency. It is a pleasure to be sit for 90 minutes with her characters. She writes really good roles for actors, and you get a full character, and they're not two-dimensional. They're not silly. They're not implausible. They're very real. And then she puts them in the situation, and you just have to love them.
For example,
when Frank Buttley is told by Pablo de Valle that Pablo's wife is upset about Frank's plants, and Frank realizes that she's upset because the plants come from someplace else. They're not native to Washington, D.C., and Frank looks at Pablo and says, she's upset because they are
immigrants.
The audience gets it right away because it is the white older man who is now the possession of the immigrant side of the argument. And then when Pablo comes back with no...
Tanya's problem is that your plants are colonialists. With gross disregard for the indigenous population.
I am surprised that you, of all people, Pablo, would defend this type of botanical xenophobia.
So that sort of cleverness of Karen's to let every character be right at times and every character to be knuckleheads at times is really delicious.
Among the audience for Native Gardens on this night was Monica Villalta, a national expert in diversity, inclusion, and cultural competence.
What I love about her plays is that they are deceivingly entertaining. You find these funny, interesting situations, and you laugh. But moments later, I find myself thinking about something else, a much deeper meaning, and it hits me. It hits me the parallels within what I'm seeing on stage and what I deal with every day at work with my colleagues. And the metaphors that she brings to the table are just mesmerizing.
So with all the success, respect, and adulation, why isn't Karen Zacarias on Broadway? Stage manager Jana Lynn is hopeful that it's just a matter of time.
I don't know why she's not on Broadway. She should be. And I think what will get her there, hopefully, is the fact that Native Gardens this season will have 9 productions at 9 different regional theaters. And when that happens, these New York producers better get on a train and come down to Washington, see this show, see why the rest of the country thinks it's worthy to be produced, and one of them better take it to New York and be the first to introduce Karen to New York.
For now, Broadway audiences can only anticipate when they'll get a chance to see a Karen Zacarias play. In the meantime, this visionary artist will continue to weave intricate layers of insight, culture, irony, and metaphors into laughter, the kind that makes people better neighbors.
So I really believe in the power of theater to kind of humanize and give us a breath and remind us of why we're here. I think the arts are really part of like the curating of the soul of our nation in a way. And so I think it can heal, it can inspire, it can entertain, it can enlighten, and it can anger and provoke.
Reporting for Alt Latino, this is Marisa Arbona Ruiz.
Thank you for joining us for our Fall Music Magazine show. Be sure to reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Thank you for listening.